You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
What is the Geekly Oddcast? It's a panel show of television.
I mean, seriously, where else was I supposed to go and watch Gomez Adams ride a rocket ship on a railroad track?
Gaming.
And the dice say 17.
Oh my god, 17 is Mystic Quest. And whatever comes to mind.
Why does Zod need a starship?
Alternating Thursdays on the Geekly Oddcast.
Huntsville, this is Commander Keel. Firing has failed.
Hello, and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back to give you a kind of a quick podcast on the Cloverfield Paradox. The reason why I bring that up, if you had watched the Super Bowl this past Sunday, not only were we treated to a trailer for the Cloverfield Paradox, but it also aired on Netflix right after the Super Bowl. So normally I don't try to do too many podcasts in 1 week, but because this happened pretty much out of nowhere, I really wanted to get at least my thoughts, my reviews, and kind of comment out about this whole Cloverfield universe and about this new Cloverfield movie. So let's start off with this. If you have not seen the Cloverfield Paradox, then by all means, pause the podcast, watch the movie, and then come back to my podcast. Simple as that. If you're not familiar with Cloverfield, let me kind of give you a brief overview. So before the first movie came out, J.J. Abrams went to Japan with his son, and of course they saw Godzilla, and you know, the idea came to him about, you know, if Japan has their monster who is represented as Godzilla, who's lasted for more than 50 years, why isn't there some kind of an American version of Godzilla? So really, that was kind of the genesis of the idea of making Cloverfield. So this movie came out in 2008, and if you made the mistake of watching this in the theaters, like I did, then you understand how it was very jarring, not because of what you see on the screen, but because everything was shot from the point of view, the first person camera view of the entire movie, and the camera moved a lot, and you really did get sick. At least I did for a couple of days after the movie came out. So it's the whole mise-en-scene, which is kind of like filmed in a documentary style, recording as it's happening. The basic premise is that there's a going away party for a guy named Rob, who had recently broken up with his girlfriend. But the movie starts off with a videotape or a video recording of them on a date. They're in an apartment in Manhattan, and throughout the course of the tape, it ends with them at Coney Island. Okay, so at the events of this movie is that someone was in charge of recording this going away party for him. Unfortunately, it's being recorded over this videotape. So every once in a while, when the tape is stopped, you'll get to see the video of their moment or their time together prior to the party. So as the party is happening, and of course, she's there to wish him good luck because he's going overseas to Japan, something happened. in which Manhattan is under siege by something, some type of creature. And if you've seen the movie or if you've seen the trailers, the iconic moment is when you see the head of the Statue of Liberty being flung across and winds up in some kind of neighborhood in Lower Manhattan, and people are just freaking out about what is happening. So that's the basic premise of Cloverfield, and basically the tape is the remnants or the leftover evidence of what happened during that time of Cloverfield, in which this creature suddenly appears out of nowhere and wreaks havoc in Manhattan. So again, that was 2006. Sorry, that was 2008. So nothing has happened as far as a sequel. So nothing happened until 2016, in which we get 10 Cloverfield Lane. So apparently, it's kind of more they refer to as a spiritual successor to the Cloverfield movie done in 2008. So with that, it's a different story altogether. It's not a big kaiju movie. It's a prisoner movie. It's a woman who gets into a car accident, and the person who kind of runs her off the road saves her and brings her into his fallout shelter that he has been planning because he believes an alien invasion is coming. So for the most part, you think he's crazy until she finally gets out and then she sees there are actually aliens, so the guy was right all along. But how is this connected to Cloverfield? Well, there are aliens, and it kind of resembles the Cloverfield monster we saw in the first one. So now to the very last part, do we see possible a connection of going on, of things going on that kind of ties together. Now, since the first movie is taking place in Manhattan, this story is not taking place there, but it's in, I think, Louisiana. And then the character Michelle wants to then join the human resistance and goes to Houston. And then an alien ship goes after her, and that's how it ends. The past couple of weeks, because I always try to do enough research ahead of time, I heard about a movie called The God Particle. The God Particle is kind of in reference to something that was recently done with a Large Hadron Collider, in which they take atoms and speed them up and then purposely collide them so that you can then explore what was inside the atom in order to find out what makes up our universe. So the God Particle is this kind of set of instructions that's the building blocks for everything around us. So we have a collider that does this, and in the space station for this movie, it does the exact same thing, in which there's going to be the benefit of everlasting energy because we are in an energy crisis. And this is the whole premise, is they're trying to solve this problem, and this collider in a space station is going to create this. So if you remember when we did experiment here on Earth, the actual collider, people did freak out. People thought a black hole would open up within the planet. The fabric of time and space would be also destroyed. So there were a lot of concerns with this experiment. Hopefully we're not living in an alternate reality, although, again, this past year sure seems like it. But aside from that, like the experiment that happens aboard this space station, although it was successful, winds up causing weird things to happen on the station, such as, one, the Earth has gone missing. So that was a big problem, because here they are, they're trying to tell everyone on Earth, hey, we got it working now, except there's no Earth. So that was a big problem. The other location is that things started to happen on board to different people. So the weird one that really grossed me out was Volkov. Volkov had this thing that he kept feeling that was going inside of his eye or underneath his skin. So at one point, Volkov looks in the mirror and his right eye kind of like, it's like not in control, and then all you see is just the white of his eye. So the actual iris part is like off to the side, and he's closing his eyes. He's trying to move it back to a normal position, and then he opens it and it goes back the other way. So I started to really start creep out because I hate anything having to do with eyes of that nature. And of course, he does see something crawling underneath his skin. So it wasn't a good ending for him, unfortunately. Other people, like Mundy, he loses his arm inside of a wall. And it didn't hurt that he lost the arm, but later on, we see his arm crawling on the floor. And he's trying to make some kind of handwriting motion, and he's indicating to the other astronauts to open up Volkov's body, because what had happened is that the gyroscope that's on board the space station has gone missing, and they need that in order to find out where they are in relation to the stars and what happened to Earth. So he writes, open Volkov, and sure enough, there's a gyroscope, and it's huge. So it's not like it's a little thing. We don't know how it got there. So it was pretty disgusting. So they get that working, and next thing you know, they get this terrible scream. I could be off with the timeline here, but they get another woman on board the space station who is kind of embedded behind a wall with cables going right through her, and her name's Jensen. So it turns out, and out of all this, that they're in an alternate parallel Earth in which she's on a crew like a space station similar to hers, but Hamilton, who is the main focus of the story, which I'll talk to you about in a moment, was not supposed to be there. She was supposed to have been on Earth with her children. So she has her own kind of like agenda to kind of get things not working or working. I'm still not sure, but it's kind of a creepy relationship that she has with Hamilton, because Hamilton and her are friends on her Earth, whereas Hamilton has no idea who the hell this woman is. Overall, when you look at this movie, okay, I'm going in and yes, I know it's part of the Cloverfield universe, but you have to look at this as a standalone movie. Sure, it has a lot of good elements of horror, and it kind of reminds me of like Event Horizon, which was Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne, even creepier there. But you know, it's a small budget movie, so I'm good with this. And considering that I saw Black Mirror, the USS Callister, it kind of has that kind of good vibe in which it's really interesting to watch, and it feels more like an anthology. It just happens to be a different genre this week, that kind of thing. So I was fine with this. I was fine with everything that has been presented. Now, the only criticism that I would have is that because Hamilton, like I said, is the main focus and the hero of the story, basically. In the beginning, you know, she's hesitant about going on this mission because she's going to be gone for however long, in which in the opening credits, we find out it's like almost 2 years later trying to run this experiment and nothing's working right. And then we see her looking at videos of her kids, which we find out later on that she accidentally killed her kids and a faulty, I guess, energy cell that she was trying to put in her house, and it winds up killing her kids. So, you know, it kind of finally clicks in until we get Jensen talking about her Hamilton that's on Earth. And Jensen is saying, you know, your kids are still alive, and Hamilton wants to stay on that new Earth because of her kids. So it's a slow burn to kind of get into her and her motivation. Whereas everyone else, you know, you kind of get creeped out by how they get killed, and it's almost kind of fun. But the crux of this whole point is that she wants to stay behind. She does not want to go home because her kids are not there. So in the course of the movie, she does change her mind, and she sends a message to herself telling her to do the opposite of what she did with her kids and to take apart that cell and, you know, protect her family. And then she gave her, I guess, schematics of the space station or their collider to generate that energy to help prevent whatever problems they're dealing with, which is an ongoing war between Germany and Russia and so forth. So she winds up going back to get this device operational. Of course, they have obstacles along the way, including Jensen herself, that is impeding their progress. So Jensen was able to use Volkov's 3D generated gun, which does it in no time, which I'm quite impressed considering our technology is not that close. But Jensen goes in the way. So basically, Hamilton has one other survivor who is the actual physicist, I believe, who created that their particle accelerator. And the two of them got it working, and then they wound up going back to their original planet, our planet. Oh, but I want to make another mention. The moment that I'm like, oh, this is reminding me of another movie, when we find out that Hamilton's kids were alive in a different Earth, there's a little movie called Another Earth, which is kind of similar in ideas. That's from 2011. If you get a chance, watch that. So it's a nice, great little sci-fi movie. It doesn't have to be overtly sci-fi, but the concept and the ideas, really kind of mind-blowing, and I really like this. So it kind of plays on that same similar aspect. So we get her back now on Earth. The device is working. They notify the support staff down below. It's working, and we're heading off back to Earth because our space station is really deteriorating for life support. But here we go. So Hamilton's husband was trying to get in contact with her, and they notified him. The support staff notified him that he is actually they were coming home, and he's like, "No, you got to tell them to go back home. I'll go back to the space station because of what is happening on Earth." And at one point, you see the space capsule dropping through the clouds, and then there comes the Cloverfield monster, which is even bigger than the first Cloverfield monster that we've seen from 2008. So there's our connection. And because I was trying to look at the timeline, and it's kind of screwy, is that this takes place in 2028. And this movie, the Cloverfield movie, took place basically in 2008. So, is there a correlation between those two points? Possibly. Because someone on the internet found, if you play both Cloverfield and the Cloverfield Paradox together at the same time, at the 1820 mark, something happens in both time frames in which events from the Paradox affects the stuff that happens in Cloverfield, which is eerie. And just recently, I think the other day, J.J. Abrams and a couple of people from the cast were on Facebook Live, in which you can go to my Facebook page for the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. You'll see the actual video, and it talked about it's just pure coincidence that happened. But that's really damn cool. I actually got really kind of creeped out, but it's like when you watch the Wizard of Oz, and you play The Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd at the exact same time. It has a whole different effect. That's kind of cool. Now, the other thing that I loved about this, and some people may not think that's great, Well, then, it's because it's the whole Cloverfield connection, right? It may be because of that last scene. Maybe people think it's a little too little. It's too little too late. And I would disagree with that, right? Let's look at the first Iron Man movie. The post-credit clip, we get Nick Fury meeting Tony Stark. Says, I want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative. Or we have Bruce Willis appearing in the last moments in a movie called Split, in which they're joining that force or that universe for Split and Unbreakable to come into a third movie called Glass. Kong Skull Island, a post-credit scene when you have the two main characters being detained and being talked to about these cave paintings, which is of Godzilla and Rodan and Mothra and King Ghidorah. So it has all these great moments that I'm like, I'm fine with that. It doesn't have to be laced with, you know, this whole connection throughout, but it did exactly what it's supposed to do. You were entertained with a different story, and this one takes place on a space station. 10 Cloverfield Lane takes place on Earth, but a different location, and it's dealing with people in a cellar. Whereas the first Cloverfield movie, it's a kaiju movie, basically wreaking havoc on Manhattan. So the idea that this can still continue, and it will continue, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but that you can play with the different genres and still connect them here and there, and that's fine, and that's great. I was actually excited that this even happened the way it did. And then we get that moment at the end where you see that big kaiju Cloverfield creature come up. I could not be more happier than that. As I mentioned, what's going to happen now? Well, before we do that, the whole idea from what I read was that Paramount was already kind of worried about the money they spent, because the first two movies, I think it's $25 million, and the other one was $15 million. So they're trying to keep it low budget, but yet it will give you high returns. Now, in this day and age where movies are over $100 million easily, Paramount was concerned with a budget that was getting inflated to about $50 million. So now if you imagine that plus the amount of money you had to use for marketing, that's going to be double your production. So they made a deal, or at least Netflix wanted to jump in and said, well, we'll take it and we'll release it on Netflix. And since Netflix is pushing a lot of original product, this is perfect for them to do that. So the amount of buzz and excitement that they generated by showing the trailer, or actually two trailers, during the Super Bowl, and then actually releasing this movie out of nowhere, did gangbusters. So, having said that, there will be, hopefully, which the movie does exist, for Cloverfield 4, in which it's called Overlord. And that's going to take place in the past for World War II. So, one of the things that I've been reading up on Cloverfield Paradox is that there is, I believe, a connection to 10 Cloverfield Lane, in which there's a person, an author, whose brother is the guy who owns the bunker in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Basically, he's a conspiracy theorist, and he talked about how creating or turning on this particle accelerator, you're going to have problems across the globe, across dimensions, and stuff that would happen now can happen everywhere, all at the exact same time. So hence why, if you look at that whole timeline thing, it's kind of cool that if that's what's happening on a space station affects stuff in the past, now I'm getting really excited about what will happen with that in the World War II setting. So I'm kind of eager to see how that will all turn out. Now, having said all of that, you would think, hey, we'll just keep it on Netflix. No. Now Paramount wants to keep it for themselves and release it, for at least that movie, into the theaters. And that one is looking sometime in October of 2018. So we shall see how that all turns out. And if that is not enough, we have possibly Cloverfield 5. And this one is with Daisy Ridley and is referred to as Colma. So I don't know too much about Colma except that Daisy Ridley is going to be in it. And we'll see whatever comes of it. But man, I'm really excited about, not so much, you know, we're getting, you know, this big monster showdown, but I'm really excited about the storytelling aspect. Because, like I said, you're able to tell different kinds of stories and still make them connectable, which is a big plus. Because if you think about like what Marvel has done with Disney's help, that whole shared universe, it's fantastic. And other franchises that didn't learn, like The Mummy, just kind of crash and burn before it even gets started. And I think even Insidious also was a shared universe, and that also has done gangbusters because they've done it right. So the Cloverfield universe is on its way to join the ranks of things done right, and I really can't be more happier than that. Other than that, I just cannot wait to see what your reactions are, because again, this came out on Sunday and I'm recording this on a Thursday, so I really had a short turnaround to kind of gather my thoughts, do some research, and produce this in a short amount of time, and still do another podcast in a couple of days. So again, I would love to hear your thoughts about this. So how can you share them with me? Easy. You can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. You can follow me on the various social networks. Thank you for listening to me and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.